Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Live from the Rings of Acten School for Music and Drama, it's a wheezing, groaning sound, the only podcast about Doctor Who. And today we're paying a trip to the planet of the giants. So don't get cut short, we'll be starting in a minute, minute.
Nice.
As we enjoy the only episode of Doctor Who to cross over with the Pink Panther, as Ian Chesterton discovers a dead ant.
Hey. Very good.
I'm Tom Deanan, and joining me are two giants of the podcasting world. It's Mr. Paul Litchfield, Mr. John Ray.
We're back, baby.
We're back. What an absolute treat. How are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Nice. I've been to a pub and I've been to a barber's, so I'm genuinely very happy.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Fetishes.
I know, yeah, obsessed.
Like one a week now, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm on three a day at the moment.
That's the expensive habit.
So we'll have to invite you to a barber's and hold an intervention at some point.
It was so lovely. Also, well, because I know you've been desperate for a haircut, John, but I know that you've had to book and wait a while. The sort of joy of where I live in Godis Green, I live above the high street, above all the shops, there are 9 barbers here.
Oh, wow.
So I knew that I would find someone that would just go, yes, come in, we can do it.
Welcome
and that
in.
That was great.
So, oh, that's yeah, so did
that.
Nice.
And then went and then had a pint for the first time in 7 months outside, and that was quite odd. I tell you what was really nice about it. The pub experience was lovely, but what I realised I'd missed so terribly was the journey home on the tube immediately needing a wee. Feeling of, it's just like how I used to remember not going for that emergency wee just before leaving, getting on the tube, 3 stops in, going, oh, God, I should have gone to the loo. I'm in agony.
Oh, God, they're regulating
the service.
That was a
beautiful feeling to be in agony on the Northern Line again.
Weird. Yeah.
No, go on.
No, but just because the Wheezing Pod has ended up weirdly being a lockdown podcast. Like, our sort of lifespan has actually been throughout lockdown, which is quite strange. So I feel like it's a real sort of development for us as a podcast that we can now think about going outside.
Just think,
as well.
One day we could do this in a room together and then go to a pub together.
That is, I might cry.
I know. Isn't that a nice thought? But talking of haircuts.
Oh, yeah.
Paul, what were the highlights on TV that day?
God, seamless. Look at that. It's only taken us 48 shows. Here we go. Well, yes, Planet of the Giants, gentlemen. Saturday, 31st of October, 1964.
Oh,
lovely. What time did it come on? It came on at a respectable 5:15.
That's good.
That's good.
Lovely, lovely time for Doctor Who. Now, obviously, it's a little bit slim pickens in 1964.
He was on telly all the time.
Yeah, he was. He used to do Newsnight. It was very odd.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's happening today, boy.
There's been trouble in the Suez Canal, my boy. Trouble in the Suez Canal. Bong, dong, bong, bong. Anyway.
You could have said that today as well. So.
Yes. It happened today. Actually,
topical.
today as we do this, they are sticking Prince Philip in a mausoleum, aren't they?
They are.
So what better way to celebrate than to talk about 3 episodes of Doctor Who randomly?
Yep. Right, it's people... in under the ground. So
there's a certain amount of soil going on there.
And Prince Philip has designed his own hearse, and I've heard his coffin is a giant matchbox. So
yeah, and the thing that killed him was some pesticides. So it's
there you go. So it all makes sense.
Yeah. In fact, seeds.
What they've done is they put some sandpaper on his head, and they're going to run him at the matchbox, and then that'll catch a light, and then he will have his own
cremation.
Proper cremation. Yeah. Yeah, that's how they're doing it. Dignity at all times.
Sponsored by Swan Vesta.
Of course, the Queen owns all the Swan Vestas, doesn't she?
Exactly.
Yes, she does.
It's actually illegal to strike a match in her presence.
It's ridiculous. I remember when the first Swan Vesta factory opened, the Queen had to individually open every match, and it just took so long. Cut tiny bits of ribbon. It was just like,
this is fucking tedious.
Anyway, she did it. I always like the idea that if a big business closes like Debenhams, then the Queen should then turn up and then sort of tie two bits of ribbon outside the building to denote that it's closed. Yeah. I think they should start doing that.
If or like getting curtains
and like covering. Yeah, decommission a ship.
You have to like glue together a champagne bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
Or she can do like a kind of Star Wars thing where she puts her hand towards the water and the champagne bottle flies out back into her hand. You'd have to do with backwards film like the goodies.
Yeah,
and do watch out for continuity because you see her skirts billowing in a really odd way. Oh, Christ. Anyway, television started at 9:30 on BBC Two with a show called Stereophony.
Stereo, you're a phony.
You're a goddamn phony. And this went on from 9:30 till 12. I think it was just like stock music. They just played random bits of music for 2.5 hours.
Sex music.
Yeah, that's a little teaser.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll definitely cover that. Well, it's Saturday, 31st of October, 1964. It's time for sex music.
With Slim Pickings.
Come on, Dad, sex music is on. Oh, it's my favourite, look. Oh. Anyway, so you had stereophony music up until midday.
Yep.
And then you had The Science of Man, documentary from egg to adult. So I think they got that wrong already.
Yeah, that's definitely wrong.
It's already got that wrong.
The old days.
And then, it was Grandstand from 1 p.m. to 5:15. And then at 5:15, Doctor Who, Planet of the Giants. No blurb, I'm afraid, Tom. So sorry.
That's a shame.
No. Imagine if it was just in italics. It was just same old.
Yeah. The Doctor makes a phone call and lights a match. I can't wait for this story.
This is... Anyway, we'll get to it when we get to
it. Just make it look like he's had a horrible dump.
Imagine if they met a dung beetle, that would have been amazing. Anyway, so at 6:15 you had something called Temple Houston, Western series. Temple discovers a ruthless and corrupt lawyer running for mayor. His campaign, doing absolutely nothing.
Whoa. Bloody Lawrence Fox sounds like that.
Doesn't it? Have any of you guys got your mayor election pamphlet delivered yet? Oh, no, you wouldn't, John.
I don't live in London. So.
No, you don't live in London. I've
had mine delivered.
Yeah, have you had a little cursory glance through the mania that is in that? So
I haven't
amazing.
Had a look at all of them. I just love the fact there's a guy called Gammons. That's my
Mr. Gammon. And yeah. I thought the Lawrence Fox one would be the one that I was going to, cut out and buy a budgie just to shit on.
Yeah.
But no, there's another one called the Heritage Party, which is amazing. It's just like, keep Britain bloody blue pack! the rhetoric is insane.
Yeah.
Speaking of insane, at 7:30 you had the Black and White Minstrels show.
Oh dear. Oh.
With Leslie Crowther.
To be fair, but it's because it was shown in black and white in those days.
So it was just the minstrel show.
Yeah. It was just someone eating chocolates. It was fine.
Oh, I miss minstrels.
Yeah, I miss minstrels. Yeah.
They're good.
Come on, BBC. Get the back in the shops. 8:30, Dr. Kildare. A 15-year-old diabetic girl falls in love with Dr. Kildare with near tragic results.
Oh, no.
So what does he do? Gives her sugar until she dies.
He's drinking her harbour.
Yeah.
And then at 9:25, it's a show called Thorndyke, and it just says Percival Bland's brother. What?
What?
Okay.
What?
Okay.
I'm sorry, what?
Is that just them throwing darts at a wall or something?
I have no idea. It's just utterly insane. Mm. And then at 10:30, the International Ballroom Championships 1964. Mm. The Duel of the Giants. The Delroys versus George and the Ronettes. And for a difference, an Israeli folk dance ensemble.
Oh, nice. Mm.
Yeah, only 5 minutes. We ain't got time for that. And that was BBC One. On BBC Two, programmes began at a respectable 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm. And it began with Open House, and it just says this: Open House, people, places, Pops. Don't know what that is.
Pops Larkin?
I don't know. Mm. People popping, or I imagine it's cool swinging sounds of the 60s. Mm. Because that was the Beat Room.
Nice.
30 minutes of non-stop beat and shake.
Oh, dear.
With this cornucopia of just think the swinging 60s, guys. Mm. With the Dixie Cups, Little Walter, Peter and the Headlines, The Roosters, and resident group Wayne Gibson and Dynamic Sound.
That's so Partridge, isn't it?
Isn't it? Absolutely brilliant. And then after that, you had something called The Old Wives' Tale, Part 4, Progeny. Ooh. Sophia has been deserted by Gerald. Gerald has started a business, but has been arrested for being a spy. Then someone's mother dies.
Ooh.
Just someone's mother. And that was closely followed by Jazz 625 up until close down. And that was your television delights in 1964. BBC One and BBC Two.
Oh,
I'd watch BBC Two that night. It sounds great.
Yeah.
The Beat Room with the Dixie Cups, and then Jazz.
A Beat Room with a Dixie Cup sounds like something you find in a sperm bank.
Yeah, it does.
Take this Dixie Cup to the Beat Room. And
sounds a bit like Jimmy Savile's Rider.
God, we must get through an episode without mentioning him.
Yeah,
we must. I want to know what time the scrutineer's on. I'm being filleted.
Yeah,
it's not an unpleasant sense. Why is someone called a groupie?
That was so good. That the most accurate parody I've ever seen.
Yes.
That was incredible.
Attitudes night.
Yeah. So why would you be watching any of that when you'd be enjoying Planet of the Giants, aka Earth? So we begin in media res.
Hey!
I'm determined to get a catchphrase in.
You've got it. You've got two.
I've got Mind's Eye and in media res.
And the TARDIS is being a dick again.
The TARDIS is being a dick. We're gonna be talking about the TARDIS being a dick quite a lot, I think.
Although it has got a griddle now.
Yeah,
which I enjoy.
It's got a George Foreman grill.
Yeah.
Susan Battalion. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, what's that? Oh, you put your hand in my eggs.
Yeah.
I'm making liver and onions. What's going on? It's a fucking TARDIS, not a burger bar.
Yeah. And so immediately, so yeah, the TARDIS is being a dick. It's making that noise. There's literally a noise that the TARDIS makes as a warning, which is the sound of someone seeing a sexy lady in a cartoon.
Off to the right, there's a wolf with its tongue all over.
Yeah.
A bad wolf.
Yeah. Oh. Hello. Oh. So there's problems afoot because of something called space pressure, which
space
sounds
pressure,
like a made-up phrase, but there's space pressure, which is causing all kinds of stuff. The scanner busts.
Yeah.
Like it would if Ian Levine was there with his hammer.
I was just going to say that. Someone has to Photoshop Ian Levine standing next to that with a hammer.
Yeah.
Someone has to do that.
If it was Ian Levine, he'd be on the console doing a shit on the grill.
He 100% listens to this, isn't he?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
He's smashing his iPod now with a hammer.
But a hammer that's
from 1964.
Of course.
A toffee hammer. Who's taking ages?
So the TARDIS materialises. What do you think of this materialisation, Paul? You happy with this one?
Not really, no, but it's fine. It doesn't make a sound. It just creeps in like a sort of predator.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Yes. So it materializes, and the Doctor realizes that during the materialization, the doors are open.
Yeah, that's true. So
they just... He just gets the companions to manually grab them. It's like,
yeah.
Surely that's like terror.
It's like when you're in a car ride with your parents and then suddenly you realise that the back door isn't locked and they're all just like, okay, open it and close it quickly. We're on the motorway.
Surely if it's slightly open when they're going through time and space, then they should come out.
Sucked out.
They should come out like some sort of Brundlefly experiment. A big pile of meat with eyes.
Yeah. What actually happens is it's a blessed relief.
Yes.
Because they're investigating, and the trouble is, I mean, the trouble is that we know what this story is called. They haven't seen the title of the story.
No.
So it takes them a long time to piece together, having seen a big egg and a big matchbox and a big worm that they maybe might be miniaturized. But it's sort of, you know, we take into account the pacing of sort of 60s TV. But there is a lot of just like, yeah, okay, there's she's like, look at that big snake. And you're like, it's clearly a worm. That is. Yeah.
And it's like, what on earth is this? You mean the big packet of seeds that's got Norwich seeds written? Has the word Norwich written on it? We must be on the planet Norwich, Doctor. Oh, for the love of fuck. The clues are there.
Yes.
Yeah. I felt sorry for Ian when she said, look at that big snake, and he turned around to check his flies. It was
never mind. So eventually, I mean, let's just cut to the chase, and they realise that maybe they have been shrunkalized.
Yes, they all come to the conclusion independently, don't they?
Yes.
Especially when Ian finds a matchbox. That's also, before he gets in it, there's obviously a step behind it.
why
so
would you get in
it's a miniature step. I know, why is your first recourse to go, I'm getting in that?
It might have a driving seat or something. Yeah. No, it's a packet of matches here.
Oh, look at this train. Would you talk about matchsticks? I'm getting in there.
Although it did have a Costa, so
that's
they get everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, when he gets in the matchbox, you can clearly see him go up some steps that are behind. I'm presuming he just obviously trod on a bumblebee or something to get in.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just trampling all over.
There was a dead step beetle down there.
Yeah.
I mean,
so they've all worked it out. Yeah,
they've all worked it out. The ant looks pretty good, and they've worked that out. What I love as well is that she finds Susan finds one egg, and he's like, "Look at this egg," and then goes, "There's loads over here," and then like an inch further along, there's like a pile of them. Anyway, speaking of inches, they are all now apparently an inch tall, but I think I'm not sure the scale is.
I was going to say the scale's way off, isn't it?
Yeah, for various things.
At one point, they get a notepad which. If scale was right, would be like one of those novelty cracker ones.
Yeah.
The bendy fish, according to your mood.
Yeah.
Run, doctor's rolling around him.
It's a cosmic fish.
Oh.
It's a two-dimensional kipper. Christ. Yeah. So, but Ian gets picked up.
He does. Which is exciting. And then he's sort of doing some weird, like, he almost sends into a music video where, like, Ian's being buffeted around inside the box, isn't it? And it's all dark. And it looks
His
like
name
it's
sort of... is Ian, and he dances inside a matchbox.
I'm a living in a box. I'm a living in a matchbox.
And the matchbox belongs to none other than Mr. Farrow.
Mr. Farrow, which is exciting.
Yes. Sort of man from the ministry, isn't he? Or scientist? Mm.
He's a scientist, and he's got some bad news to deliver to this house.
Yes.
He's come there in person because he's got some bad news, which is that he cannot approve the mass manufacturing of a thing called VM6?
DM6, I thought
DM6,
it was called.
DM6, sorry, I can't read my own writing.
Sure.
And he's there to tell his friend, Mr. Foster, that he can't do that.
Who's
Mr.
played
Foster,
by... sorry, go on.
I think we were about to say the same thing.
Go on.
He's played by Kate Maroon.
Yes.
He works for Peanuts.
And also, this mass production's going on in a tiny little cottage.
It's very quaint.
It is very... This whole... Yeah. It's basically... It's a murder mystery that can be solved with... Basically, the whole thing is solved by a very enterprising lady at a switchboard. Like, the dogs has very little to do with any of this. But we'll get
absolutely
right. No influence.
No. Yeah.
There's no reason at all that they're there. At all.
I half expected them to bump into David Bellamy at one point. Because he used to miniaturise himself and jump around in trees.
Oh, he did, he? Yes.
I'm in a tree.
Look at all these lovely, squeamy-weamy doctors.
Look at these stupid cunts not knowing they've been miniaturised.
Let's get one under the microscope, shall we? he became a climate change denier.
Did he?
Genuinely. What a
Johnny
shame.
Johnny Ball as well. Johnny Ball's a climate change denier.
Think of a number.
Reveal all. Don't reveal all, Johnny.
Yeah. Please don't. So at this point, they're finding all these dead animals. And then there's an actual... So it's delivered. It's told that that Farrow says he's not going to... can't approve it. No. And Foster shoots him.
Shoots him. Yeah, that's what you do. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what you do.
This is a man who's got access to dangerous chemicals and he decides to shoot him.
Just shoots him in the stomach.
Later on... I think, if I'm remembering rightly, I'm so confused with who. But later on, doesn't all the gas leak out?
They start leaking out the gas. So that would have, that could have been a way of...
He came in the lab and it went off and now he's dead and it's very sad. But shoots him.
shoots him and then, what is he going to do? He's going to put him on a boat or something? because the guy who says, I'm going on holiday soon. Oh. And the guy goes, I'll make it look like you were murdered on the way to your holiday.
And you're... Which is
and
fair
I'll,
enough.
I'll get away with that.
His boat collided with a bullet.
Yeah.
But he manages to get the other scientist complicit in it, doesn't he?
Yes. Smithers is there, and here Smithers gets. What I love as well is that there's just a bit where Ian is like standing by the dead guy's face, just like looking at it, and doesn't he do a thing where he like checks his breathing by like holding up a sheet up to his mouth or something?
Yeah,
that's very weird.
By farting up his nose. Just do a little salts. Jiggy. No, he's dead, Doctor.
This man's... we are reunited. All of the TARDIS crew are reunited by this dead bloke.
Well, what I like is, from their perspective, the gunshot sounds like a cannon.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the science of all that.
No.
Wouldn't it just sound like a gunshot? I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway.
It's a big plot like point is that their voices are too high, isn't it? That's
they're all...
And when they hear people talking, it's like...
They missed the trick. It should have been Charlie Brown's school teacher. Sir.
And they all turn around and shock horror, it's a cat.
It's
end
a
of part
cat.
One.
I mean, that is a great cliffhanger, isn't it?
Yeah.
You think of Doctor Who in years to come. If you turn around and someone, the cliffhanger would be a cat. Yeah. People would think you were mad.
Yep. I mean, is it the next cliffhanger is pulling out a plug? So it's absolutely plug, thrilling.
They were very simple in those days.
So part two, which is cool, because obviously the episodes had their own individual titles, which is called Dangerous Journey.
Not really.
No.
And what I love is that you pick off right from the last cliffhanger and the captain wanders off.
Yeah. The cat wanders off. And they make the decision. They go, well, we can't go back to the TARDIS. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Why can't you get back to the TARDIS?
And the Doctor immediately leaps to a conclusion that because they now scan the Vista and they see the biggest cottage in the world, and they go, whoever lives in that cottage is a murderer. What?
Yeah.
Immediately leapt to that conclusion.
Yeah, and like, we can't trust them. We can't speak to them because if they're a murderer, then they'll see tiny people and they'll murder us too. They'll shoot. So I don't understand why they can't leave, but nevertheless, they are off. They are going to find out what's going on, no matter how...
Well, they heard him saying fee-fi-fo-fum, and they thought they have to go and get the golden egg, so...
Yes.
Hi there, I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries, and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So Ian and Barbara immediately hide in a briefcase.
Mm. Of course.
Stop getting in things.
I'm obsessed with getting in things.
Although they make the better choice.
Surprised they didn't go up the guy's
arse. Exactly. Surprised one of them just didn't do a shit in the bullet wound.
You know? Doctor, what are you doing?
I thought it was a chemical toilet.
Of course it's not a chemical toilet. It's a dead man.
Yeah. It's a bullet wound, you horrible man. Stop shitting in corpses. It's really wrong.
Shouldn't have to say this again, Doctor.
That's how we got excise from Delphon 6.
Imagine him plunging his head directly in the bullet wound of the rest of the show. His entire head is just bright red.
Nice. The fourth Doctor was sort of a bohemian, and the third Doctor was a dandy, and the first Doctor was a necrophilia.
He's a fucking thug. Well, we already know that the first thing the Doctor does in the very first episode in An Unearthly Child is he finds a caveman, and his first recourse is to stove its head in. It's the first thing the Doctor does.
Yep.
Oh, dear. Colin was right in his choices, I think.
Yeah,
he was reflecting the first Doctor.
Exactly.
So I think that all the props now, I mean, look brilliant. I mean, getting into the briefcase looks fucking great. Mm. Yeah. It looks like, wow. And I like the fact that they get jostled around a bit and Barbara says, oh, she got injured by a paperclip. And I was just thinking how much further that could have gone. Like one of them falls into some cottage cheese. one of them gets impaled on a protractor or something.
And they find Gooch in there.
Yeah.
I know I'm saying his name wrong. Stop correcting me. I don't care. I like him being called Gooch.
Gooch. It's how it sounds.
It's beautiful prop work in this.
Yeah, it is.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, when we do our sort of sum ups, I have to say, it's fun. It's obviously you don't have your Barry Letts style CSO that you can use in this. So actually, for the technology they have, watching Doctor Who and then be shrunk must have been absolutely thrilling. Mm. And I think it delivers a lot of it. I mean, what we got next is one of the most baffling decisions, which is they go in the suitcase and the Doctor and Susan decide they're going to go through the drains.
I'm going to crawl up the drain pipe.
I know.
Mind you, listen, it could have been a lot different if they went up the sewage outlet pipe. Yeah.
Oh, came Maroon shitting on them.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine if that's the cliffhanger, giant arsehole descending.
God.
And the worst thing, of course, is that I ate lots of peanuts.
I'm going to have to watch that tonight.
Yeah.
It's what a good film. So, yeah, so they are. So the Doctor doesn't do that. He isn't heading for the black hole of Tartarus, a la Terror of the Vervoids. they're climbing up the pipe, and then
it must stink. It must absolutely stink.
Aren't they climbing rust? Like at one point, Susan's like, "Thank God that these pipes are so degraded that we've got footholds." You're like, "Oh, so it's just like they're putting their hands in rust." Mm. Must be horrible.
Rust and moss and sludge and bird shit. And God knows what.
Meanwhile, Ian and Barbara they're having a little look round.
Because the briefcase has been put on a desk, hasn't it?
Yes. So
they get to do some desk snooping.
Yeah. And they find a pile of seeds.
Mm-hmm. a pile of wheat.
Yes.
And Barbara clearly picks a bit up. Mm. Ian sees her do that, but some doesn't seem to somehow register that she's done that for the rest of the plot.
Yeah.
And then seems to revel in the fact that she's getting iller and iller. He's almost enjoying it. It's really
They
sick.
Keep on getting Barbara to do loads of like physical labor when she's clearly not up to it. They're like, could you just help us lift this massive receiving? She's like, okay. Oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine.
Absolutely fine. I've just touched diseased wheat.
Yeah.
It just reminded me of that bit in Airplane where they're describing what would happen if someone had eaten the fish.
Yeah.
Because the doctor's like, well, they could probably die. Barbara's like, oh, really?
See, she's clearly dying, but doesn't want to tell anyone for some reason. Didn't want to make a
fuss. Yeah, I don't know why she wants to keep that quiet. Yeah, but she does.
And then they're all heading towards the sink. That's where they're all heading towards. I think that the plug hole looks pretty good. I think that's
I think this is the highlight of the whole thing, is all the sink stuff. It looks genuinely amazing.
Yeah.
It does, doesn't it? And you can see why
that... huge set that they built.
It's massive. Yeah.
With the plug and the chain and the aluminium dip. It looks really good.
It does.
For such really an inconsequential good. Piece of... It looks great.
Yeah. So they meet and then they're climbing down. But then And Smithers starts washing his hands.
Yes.
The only man I know, maybe this is a scientist thing and maybe we should all be doing this during COVID, but like the only man I know who to do sort of a thorough wash of his hands puts the plug in. For some reason, I was just like, why is he doing that? Yeah, just have the water running. Anyway, that confused me. But because that's the end of part two, is that goodness, Smithers is washing his hands.
Yeah, we're through the dangerous journey.
Yeah. Being on a
drowned
desk.
In fairy liquid.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought it was hands that did the dishes. It's Smithers' thing. Sorry, that's an awful joke.
Hands wasn't available.
No. Yeah, yeah. So then we're part three. Yes. Crisis.
Yes,
but
is it though?
Is it anything?
I think it should have been called Apology.
Yeah.
It should have been called The Phone Call.
Yeah,
because that's what happens.
Yeah,
they make a phone call.
Luckily, the doctor hasn't been injured because they hide in the overflow pipe.
Yes.
Now I don't know about you, but overflow pipes are just notorious gunge.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
The doctor should be climbing out covered with his jam blood head, covered in bird shit.
They should be meeting that little fella from Labyrinth. Hello, come inside.
Oh, yeah.
Meet the wife.
Don't go that way.
he's like a germ.
Yeah.
Hang on, if they're only an inch tall, surely they could see some sort of microbial action.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, say what you like, but RK Maroon's kitchen is spotless.
It really is. There's nothing.
Keeps
no
a tidy
drums.
Kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah. So then they make a phone call, which at this point in my notes, because obviously to make a phone call back then, you have to go via the switchboard and ask for someone, and they have to connect to you. And I just wrote, God, it was shit in the past, wasn't it?
Like, just get anything done. And also, you have to ring up the local village gossip as well.
Yeah. Snooping on
village gossip, how can I help you? And she's immediately, I don't sound like the doctor at all.
Oh, she knows the sound. She knows the voice of everyone who lives in that area.
Come on, let's be fair. He really covered his voice well by putting a handkerchief over the phone.
Yeah.
What is this? It's used in so many things.
So many things.
That the judicial use of cloth.
Yeah.
Somehow turns you into fucking the guy from Police Academy. You can just do any voice or sound in the world. It just makes your own voice sound muffled, doesn't it? That's anything you can do. I don't understand
it. We know that RK Maroon can do an American accent because he's RK Maroon. Mm. So like I don't know why they didn't make Pharaoh American or so, because we know because then you could put on an accent
make it much more obvious, no, it's just hello, Pharaoh here. And the world's like, nothing like him.
Nothing like him. So he's like, this report, I use this insecticide is amazing and you should all definitely use it. Despite the fact that it literally, it's just like anthrax is what this thing appears to be. It's just it kills everything.
And also, ringing up the local operator going, put me through to the ministry of the king and queen and everything in the world. All right, extension 3, is it? Right. It's just so brilliant. You're immediately put through to the ministry.
But
it's good that he does the Bobby Davro technique of getting over having a bad impression by saying, hello, Pharaoh here. Like when Bobby Davro used to say, hello, I am Benny from Crossroads.
Or any sketch on Dead Ringers.
Yeah.
Whoa. I don't write for
hot
it.
Hot take.
Yeah. I'll take that one.
To be fair, that's John Coleshaw does a good impression of someone doing an impression of John Coleshaw. That's all.
John Coleshaw probably listens to this because he's a massive hooey. We love you, John.
I love John Coleshaw. I'm just being silly.
Yeah. Was that John Coleshaw just then doing a John Rain impression?
He was.
Well, what many listeners don't know about Wheezing Groaning is John Coleshaw's been doing this for 6 months.
He's all three of us.
We've been away on sabbatical.
We've been stuck in a sink. But we haven't miniaturised. I don't know how it happened. We just literally got all stuck in a sink.
So this phone call's happened.
Yeah.
Barbara's sort of rallied a bit, having been told to like lift things and move things and get bits of cork and jam them under stuff. And so there is at this point that they're going to make their own phone call. They're going to try and make their own phone call.
Oh, God.
Yeah, which takes forever. But it's really like quite...
It's ingenious and fun and odd and pointless and redundant, but I can't remember. Yeah.
Because, they try and speak to this woman, but then she's like the teacher from Peanuts and they can't really hear her. Mm. So then although she sort of is suspicious enough to send over the policeman who sat next to her.
Yeah. Anything happening today, Doris?
Well, I mean,
you sit here every day waiting for something.
Funny you should say that. I think Bobby Davro's in that.
Blimey, he's my favourite comedian.
I better arrest him 2-3.
And he looks to the camera. I say comedian, but you know what I mean.
He's all right in small doses, you know.
And entertainer. It's a different genre back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's no Barry Took, but who is he? Well, just get on with your job.
I'd love to sit here all day talking about comedians, but I'm not going to do police work, I'm afraid.
Does the policeman have a name? I don't know if he even has a name. Like, I
don't think
Arthur
he has
Claude or something.
Yeah. He just goes off, doesn't he? He's just policeman. Off to investigate based on nothing.
Investigate nothing. Yeah. Go on then.
I want him to be called like Jack Kippers.
Yeah, exactly.
I reckon he's one of those blokes that isn't a policeman but just dresses as one in the village. Hasn't got the heart to tell him anymore. I'm going to go and investigate the stream. All right, go on then.
I wanted to be that bloke from that video. This is a citizen's arrest. You're under arrest. Under arrest. This is a citizen's arrest. Now you die.
So I'm getting on my bike and I'm going off to the lovely cottage.
He's off to investigate.
I'm very suspicious about all of this.
And then, assuming that's worked, the doctor and the assistants then pursue their second line of attack. Which is vandalism. Vandalism to start a fire.
Vandalism and pyromania.
Yeah. they're going to...
What a keen mind the doctor has.
Let's start a fire.
Oh, you think in like 10 years' time you've got Tom Baker taking the guts out of a machine to build a space version of that machine. And this one's just like, let's set fire to the fucking...
They've got this can, isn't it? This aerosol can.
Yeah.
Aerosol can and a Bunsen burner that releases gas.
So they're going to set fire. So they set fire to it successfully. It's incredibly dangerous.
Ian has to do a run-up, though, with the match. That's
brilliant. Yeah, yeah. what is frustrating, I guess it's limitations of budget, is that at no point are any of the humans made aware that they're a tiny people. They don't interact in any way.
imagine if it had gone wrong, though. The news report saying, a cottage burnt down today in Suffolk.
Yes.
And three tiny skeletons were found.
Inside a cat.
Yeah.
And inside one a cat in the wound tray. Of a dead man. He seems to be defecating as he died.
God, it's
one inch man hanging out of a bullet wound. Scotland Yard, to quote, are absolutely baffled.
It's like Pompeii.
The doctor would definitely be found wanking like that. Like Pompeii. Or Ian, actually. Ian, probably. More
definitely, likely. Definitely. Yeah. So the doctor comes up with a plan that's most dangerous to him and his assistants.
Exactly, a fire and gas. That'll solve it. That'll solve everything.
Yeah, it does. It would. You think of any Doctor Who story, and that would solve it. So he's right.
It's true. That is true.
Right.
My name's Adric. Right, get the gas in the fire.
That bit of a thing, they all come in with flamethrowers.
Yeah, yeah.
Adric, so untie me from this fucking chair! Oh, dear.
So yes,
am I right or wrong that the doctor at this point doesn't know that he's also somehow stopping this horrible disease from... He's not aware of any of that, is he?
No. No, not really.
He's just miniaturising a cottage trying to start a fire.
Yeah.
What he's doing that day.
A twisted fire starter.
Yeah. He just happens to be helping out.
It's not like he's going, oh, I'm going to save humanity in a roundabout way. There's none of that. It's just, let's start a fire for fucking months. All right.
So the aerosol can explodes and blinds Arcane Marine.
Yeah. Oh.
That's nice.
He'll never draw again.
No.
Can't find my peanuts.
Oh dear.
God.
And so they run off. Basically, they run off. The policeman is then like, "You're arrested," I assume, because they haven't done a good job of hiding the body.
No, they haven't.
No.
They haven't even tried.
No.
Tried. It's just leaning against the front door. Like a foot scraper.
Yeah. Like, to be fair, they put a lampshade on his head. So.
Yeah.
But outside in the garden, no one will suspect a thing. It's in the garden, you idiot. Some passerby trying to plug him in. It's a socket.
Oh, where's the socket? Did you say?
Is this a standard? Not in the garden, sir.
Jesus.
So they make their way back to the TARDIS, having achieved whatever it is they think they've achieved.
What have they achieved?
Loving!
They've turned up because the TARDIS made a mistake.
Yeah.
And they wandered around in miniature crawling through shit, slime and God knows what. Set a fire and then fucked off. They could have called this set a fire and fuck off.
Yeah. I guess, like, by phoning the switchboard, that woman was alerted. Like, she had to do so much. Like, her mind.
Yeah,
had
she
to
literally
so
became
leaps.
Sherlock Holmes immediately, didn't she? Yeah. What? Oh. I can't hear anyone at the end of the phone. Well, it's some industrial espionage plot to grow some secret scenes that may poison mankind. I better get Arthur, who dresses up as policeman, to go down and sort that out. What? It's a big leap in plot, isn't it?
It really
Well, thank God for her, is all I can say.
Yeah, she
saves
the day,
to her.
That lady. Yeah. Because all the doctor manages to do is slightly injure the eye of a man. That is...
Yeah, and then the policeman turns up and goes, I'm arresting all of you for something that I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
You're all under arrest for some reason.
All right, I'll come quietly. It's a fair cough.
Yeah, you got me. So then they get their way back to the TARDIS, which they could have done from the start, and the story would have
they
been...
They could have opened the TARDIS door, seen a worm, and gone, fuck this. Straight back in the door.
Yep. So they're back in the TARDIS, but poor Barbara is still suffering, because of course
she's very
she is, because...
Ill.
Yeah, she's very ill. And
we also get some other science now, because when Barbara returns to normal size, the disease that's in her isn't a disease, and it's and magic's happened. It's like, what? She's still got disease in her bloodstream.
Wouldn't the disease stay the same size as her body? Because like, it's not like when she grows, her clothes stay miniature. Like,
I know, it's like the idea that if during the episode Ian ate a breadcrumb, and then when he gets back to normal size, there's an entire loaf of bread sticking out of his head. Because it's all gone wrong with the ratio. Just make your mind up.
Yeah.
Just a massive loaf of bread for a face. Then the episode ends. The way Doctor Who ends silently.
French stick for a nose.
Yeah. French stick.
Croissants for ears. And a sliced white loaf for a face. Fade to black end.
Yeah.
Doctor Who will return.
Yeah.
Dark in Sourdough Ian.
Would not be a classic if Ian had done the whole thing.
Next week, the Hovis abomination.
The Hovis experiment. Ian gets cut into soldiers and dipped into an egg. Don't worry, the doctor saves the day. He sets fire to the egg.
Hard boiled.
Yeah, so they get back in the TARDIS, and then the TARDIS is now working for some reason. It's just had a rest or something.
Yeah. He turned it on and off again.
Yeah, on and off. TARDIS goes back to full size to prove that it's all fine, because they bring in a giant ant egg, and then it's all back to normal size.
And it shrinks. Yeah. And what I love is when William Hartnell's like, look, it's a normal size. He's clocking the monitor to make sure he's lined up the shot properly.
Oh, yeah.
He's really doing it, because obviously they've got to get the close up. But he's like, he goes, look, and he's sort of looking at the floor manager to make sure he's got the right shot. It's lovely.
Look, and I'm then... doing it. No, don't.
I'm going to take a shit of it. No.
No, you're not.
Not in here. Do it outside.
So. At that point, they take off, having achieved, Barbara got Nada. Ill and now is better, they've achieved nothing, and off they go to their next adventure, the Dalek Invasion of Earth, 20, whatever it is. A classic. Anyway, you can see why at the end of that one.
Big shift in tone.
Yeah, Susan's like, I'm leaving now.
That's enough now.
Yeah. In the last story, we just blinded a man.
Turned up to a beautiful... Airbnb, blinded the man and left. There's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
It's such a weird story, isn't it? But I don't know. It's just, it's fun.
It's charming.
It's really charming and pastoral,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Should we do our scores and then.
What shall we score?
Goodness. Wow. Yeah, what's it to be scored? There's lots of little, like, different things. Like, I like the bit in litmus paper when he picks up some litmus paper. What's the line he says? I wrote it down. He says,
shipper's paper.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that.
What is it? All for the many times I have held litmus paper in my fingers. You're like, all right.
There you go then. Yeah. Well, it's out of 100 litmus papers then.
Yeah. Right. Okay. There it is. So I think this is utterly charming. It doesn't make any sense, but like. As you know, you're watching that in the 60s, and you're like, you get everything you want. There's a big ant. There's a big plug hole. They set a fire.
Everything you want.
Yeah. I'm gonna give this 67 litmus papers.
Wow.
This
one. Okay. Well, yeah, it's weird to have a storyline where the Doctor and the companions. Presence just happens to be by the by, and almost sort of like observing what's going on and sort of being part of it, but it's of zero consequence. But I think for me, it's just the impressive sets, and you know, the matchbox looks brilliant, the sink looks brilliant, the chain looks, it all looks really great. And as we know, you know, they often drop the ball with sets and costumes
for
the next 50, 60, 70 years. So, quite frankly, 1960. Before that's obviously that's where all the budget went. It is such a weird thing. They turn up by accident, crawl around shit, set a fire, and go home. It's a bit utterly pointless. But the whole journey's like, oh, that's brilliant. Oh, look at that. They're all tiny, and it's really good fun.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like a Doctor Who story that really wasn't a Doctor Who story, but really good fun. I'm going to give it 60.
Lovely stuff.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to basically just echo what you both said. I love the sets. Mm-hmm. It's really charming. It's that lovely slice of 60s TV that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it extra points for the fact that poor William was spared the scene where he had to do the equation.
Oh, yes.
Because you could tell he was having trouble reading all those words out. When they're on the notepad, it kind of cuts and then comes back and he goes, I've solved it. So I like that. So I'm not going to go as
picture of a stick man with a big willy.
Put in there. I'm not going to go as high as you two, because although I enjoyed it, it didn't hold my attention much. And as you say, the actual adventure wasn't really an adventure at all.
No.
Going up and down a plug and then going home again.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it 49.
49, which means that 176 litmus papers for the Planet of the Giants, aka
that's a respectable score.
It is, and I just think, it's a three-parter as well. Got like more three-parters, please, because it sort of it means that you never, there's not any lag. It was entertaining all the way through, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good length. Well done, everyone.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it could have, imagine if they just did that storyline, but there was a race of miniature aliens there. that would have been the story.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
like
yeah,
an
yeah.
invasion fleet, but it's of no consequence because all they're going to do is kill a cat or something. Like that would have been really good fun.
Yeah.
Were there any correspondence about
there were. There were. First one from Tamara Bumdier. She says, Planet of the Giants, take that, Greta Thunberg. Greened political drama before hippies.
Take that.
Take. I like that's against Greta is the ecology theme of this episode.
Yeah.
Short and sweet, only marred by Babs falling over and fainting over and over again. And she's giving it 54 ant eggs.
I think that's about representative of what we've gone for. Yeah.
Tom Burgess. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
He says, Planet of the Giants is one of the last classic stories I watched, so it's always felt a bit unknown, weird, and forgotten, which is nice because it means it still surprises me by being good.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
I'm just checking now. Hang on a sec. Ben Thomas, Planet of the Giants. As Forrester and Smithers drag Farrow's dead body across the ground, Frank Crenshaw, playing Farrow, can be seen blinking a few times. It's been theorised he's trying to communicate SOS with his eyelid and Morse code to his agent. Crinoid podcast said Planet of the Giants, the TARDIS team are even smaller than the subplot as William Russell nails the classic trapped in a giant matchbox mime and Barbara nearly dies of being British.
She is. She's so embarrassed to admit she's done something wrong.
British in a built-up area.
Yeah.
Hang on a sec. Sorry about this. Nick H says, Planet of the Giants still feels longer, three episodes. God knows how boring the fourth episode version must be. Still, the sets are really good, and I like the eco message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the eco, it's an interesting eco message, because basically it's like, oh, don't release that thing that kills everything. And someone else going, oh, I quite want to do that. Mm. It's not the most nuanced message, but I enjoyed it.
And that is it for the correspondence. Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good Lord. Well, that was Planet of the Giants. I really enjoyed this one.
I hadn't seen it in yonks.
Yeah.
Like 30 years. So it was so nice just to see that again.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's three episodes as well. Lovely.
Well, it's the thing about Who in it. There's a bit for everybody, especially if you go back or forwards. There's always something for a different niche. And I think this is nice little cozy 60s TV.
Mm. Yeah. Lovely stuff.
Wonderful.
How do we end these?
Well, we usually say keep following us at Wheezing Pod.
Oh, yeah.
Please keep sending in your correspondence. We've got more episodes to come after this, obviously, and we've got another themed run after these three, which we'll announce. We're announcing the last episode of this run. Until next time, we'll go back into our sink to become sink operators. And thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Let's get high on Harpic.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends, or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
GreatBigOwl.com.
It doesn't make sense to break up with your one and only unless you're falling for something saucier. Something with a crispy southern breading and one extra ingredient. Something that makes your taste buds tingle. Yeah, it's time to dump your old wings and get a new honey, lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. And if that's not your type, don't worry. We've got five other flavors. Mmm, now that's a wing worth stopping for. We don't make sense. We make chicken.
Love that chicken from Popeyes.
At participating U.S. restaurants.